Public CEO Report is a podcast that provides insights about the public sector and public policy for the benefit of decision makers and leaders powering our communities.
I'm your host, writer Todd Smith, and today we're joined by Atascadero City Manager Jim Lewis. Jim, welcome to the Public CEO Report.
Good morning. It's great to be here, and I've wanted to do this with you for a long time, and I appreciate all you do for cities, writer. Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you, Jim. I appreciate what you've done for the many cities you've had a chance to work in and the profession in general. This is probably for some listeners, this might turn into a borderline love fest just because Jim and I go back 20 plus years together. Both are of similar ages, and so we've grown up in local government world together. But I'm excited to have you here because you've been involved in local government your entirety of your career. I've been deeply involved with association groups and leadership within the city management profession. And so you bring some really good kind of 32,000 foot perspective on the city management profession in general. So great to have you here today and a perfect kind of guest for public CEO.
Perfect.
So which takes me to the first question, right? Like, why did you become a city manager, Jim? What brought you to this journey in life?
Yeah, you know, this is my story is going to be, they're all interesting, right? But mine's going to be very unique in that I think I was about as close to being born a city manager, I think, as one would. And I think I joke with people that I was probably dropped on my head as a small child, which is how I ended up in this profession. But that's not true. You know, I love it. And there's nothing I'd rather do. I thought I was going to be a medical doctor. I was really interested in radiology and sciences. And I did very well in anatomy in high school and did some college work in high school. And at the same time, I was the student body president of my high school and actually was the student representative on our school board in Torrance, California, is where I was raised. And so I was very into politics and government and leadership, but I love science and just the human body and medicine, very interested in it. And my grandmother, when I was 13, died of breast cancer. And I think that struck me. I really wanted to find a cure for that. I was very interested in that. And so that was kind of the course of study I was headed towards. I was admitted to the University of Southern California, fight on, pre-med, and that's where I was headed. And so right around April of my senior year, so this would have been 1993, all of the student councils in Torrance met for something called Youth and Government Day. And it was at the council chamber in Torrance. And it was really a great program about how cities work. And each of the department heads spoke about their profession and why you should be one of them. The last person to speak was the city manager. And here's a name from the past, Leroy Jackson, right? One of our great ones. He was a city manager for over 40 years. And he talked about what he did. And he said, if you like business and want to lead an organization combined in the political environment, city management is for you. And a darn bee might have just stung me. It was like, wow, that's what I want to do. And I went to USC that August and changed my major to public policy and management. And I knew from then on, I wanted to be a city manager. And I started following Torrance City Council meetings and watching what Leroy did. My mother worked for the city. And so I kind of had an in there on kind of what was going on. My brother also did. And so I immediately wanted to get my turn at it. And my first internship, I'll get to that later, was in Glendale in 1995. But that's how I knew I wanted to do it. It struck me like a bolt of lightning.
I think that Leroy Jackson name is a oldie but a goodie, right? Leroy Jackson was a very long-term serving city manager, all in Torrance, is the best of my recollection. Is that right,
Jim? Yes, that's right. He was the personnel director for a number of years and then was city manager over 40 years. And I'll tell you, they actually named the council chamber after him. Wow. That is an honor.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. And he only retired, I only feel like it was a few years ago, right?
Yeah, I think three years. Yeah. Arm took his place.
Yeah. So very interesting. That's powerful. That's a great story. And a great city manager was the one who inspired you to actually enter that profession, right? So I'm sure your mother was thrilled that you redirected from pre-med to go to this crazy profession, city management. Yeah. At least she knew what a city manager was because she worked in the city.
You know, it's funny. My mother, God love her, wonderful woman, very good mother. But as a city employee, you know, she was more involved in some of the association union activities. And I don't think she was fond of city managers. And she begged me to not be one. And I promised her, I said, Mom, I'm going to be a city manager. It shows you that we're all good. We can be good people.
Wow.
Out of my career and how I've treated employees over the years.
That's That's a wonderful twist on the story, Jim. Thanks for sharing that. All right. So give us the I know it's been a career path for you. I mean, you're not ancient by any standard because you're my age. So I used to be ancient.
Thank you.
But give me the career path. Like, how'd you manage to maneuver your career into becoming a city manager?
Yeah, man, I have been so blessed by incredible mentors and incredible people. I'll start with that. And if you're listening, I would just share, if you're not mentoring someone, you should. If you're not paying it forward, you should. This profession is all about that. And we need good people more than ever. And good people come from good people. And so we need to really make sure we're doing our best. So my career started, I really wanted to work in Torrance. Didn't quite know how to get that opportunity. An opportunity in the city of Glendale fell on me. So my first internship was in the mighty Traffic and Transportation Division of Glendale, California. I worked on the Beeline bus and on helping to establish the Metrolink station there. That's what makes me sound old when I'm talking about Metrolink coming to Glendale. It's been running for decades. But that was my first internship. I was there for about a year, a little over a year. And then I just reached out to Leroy one day and said, hey, can I intern with you? I'd love it. And he graciously agreed. And so I worked for the city of Torrance for 2 years as an administrative intern in the city manager's office. And Leroy let me come to department head meetings and executive team meetings and was very gracious with his time and confidentiality, frankly, letting me really be in meetings that an intern shouldn't have been. And then my kind of key job was being the fixer. So I was, if a complaint got to the city manager's office and hadn't been dealt with, I would deal with it and earned a knack for that. I really was grateful for learning how cities work, who does things, who fixes things, how to really take a citizen concern or complaint, digest it with empathy and compassion. And sometimes you can't fix it, you know, and how you convey that to the person. So that was a great opportunity. That was my main role. And then from there, and I didn't, I'm sorry, prior to work, I completed USC in public policy and management. I was very fortunate to earn a Truman Scholarship, which was a full ride. There's only about 60 of us per year. I was the Truman Scholar of California in 1996, which allowed me to have a guaranteed admission to anywhere. I was very humbled by that. I chose Syracuse University, the Maxwell School. It's the oldest and top school of government in the country. And so I went to there and graduated in 1998. So while I was there, I actually had my internship from Torrance. I finished in Torrance, went to Syracuse. I worked for the city of Auburn, New York, believe it or not. Auburn, mm-hmm. New York. There are very few city manager cities in New York. Most of them are stronger mayors or elected executives. And so I found the city manager city there. I reformed their entire budget program and put in performance measurement. That was my graduate school project. Ironically, or interestingly enough, the city manager at the time was Jeff Towery. And Jeff Towery just finished his term as the president of the International City Management Association. And so he's a city manager in Oregon. So that's how, when I say be good and mentor people, this is a very small profession. Mm-hmm. And here I interned for a man who was the city manager of Auburn, New York, who many years later would be president of the ICMA. And we're very good friends. And so he was one of my first mentors. So again, I've been blessed by people. It's unbelievable that my first city manager mentor was Leroy Jackson. My second city manager mentor was Jeff Towery, president of ICMA. Then I knew I wanted to get back to California. I was really trying to figure out where I was headed. And I interviewed in a few places. I sent a letter to every city manager in LA County, actually, asking for a job and some different results. I was hired for the Long Beach internship management intern program and also the Phoenix management intern program. So I was thinking about those. And then I received a call back from the city of Claremont as a management mm-hmm. analyst. And I thought, man, if I can just jump right in, I want to do that. And so it was a very big recruitment. I think there was over 100 applicants. And I interviewed there and was hired. I interviewed with assistant city manager Bridget Healy. She gave me a shot. I'd never had full-time experience, and they were looking for someone with that. But she'd known I was in student government at USC, and that was a really responsible situation. And she convinced the city manager, who many of us will know the name, Glenn Southard, to hire me. And so my first job was as a management analyst in community services. And so I managed public transportation, the municipal cemetery, go figure. I learned a lot about
it. I didn't even know Claremont had a municipal cemetery.
Oak Park Cemetery. I did emergency services coordination and was kind of the financial analyst for all the enterprise funds. So great first job. From there, We had a police shooting that was a justified shooting. A young African-American man pulled a gun on officers and was tragically shot. Very sad. That situation anywhere is sad. But nonetheless, the officers did what they felt they had to do. It became controversial. Long story short, I asked the city manager if I could move to the police department to help the new chief and put in some new measures that were more for citizen engagement, transparency, and policing. So I was an analyst in the police department as well. That was a great stint. Most of us as civilians don't get to spend time in a police department. Right. So I was there for a year and a half, learned a lot about law enforcement. Came back to the city manager's office to be assistant to the city manager. I was Glenn's chief of staff. He, again, is a great teacher about how to get things done effectively and really enjoyed that. Did business relations, some economic development. I was the budget officer, intergovernmental affairs. So that was really just tremendous. And then I realized my roots and my little flower pot were getting too big for that city and that role. And Mrs. Lewis and I really were realizing that we wanted to have a family, and that wasn't where we wanted to do it. And so we'll get to the Central Coast later. But an opportunity came up in Atascadero to work for Wade McKinney, another just wonderful man in our profession. And I interviewed for the first assistant city manager position. So he created a new position that was basically the chief operating officer over human resources, IT. I was the assistant executive director. I ran the redevelopment agency. So just tremendous opportunity. And I came to work for Wade. We moved to Atascadero in 2004. Loved every bit of it. I worked here for 8 years. I had a tremendous experience as assistant manager, but again, realized that maybe I was kind of done with that role. I was very fortunate to be hired as city manager of Pismo Beach. And as many of you know, I was there for 10 and a half years and had the dream opportunity to come home. I've lived in Atascadero for 20 years. And on July 1st of last year, I was appointed city manager here. So just a tremendous storybook career. I'm so grateful. And I've had wonderful mentors.
Yeah, I mean, those names, right, between Leroy Jackson, Glenn Dowry, and Wade McKinney are just, I mean, those are big time names, right? These are names that people recognize and respect and have had tremendous careers in local government. So that's awesome. Fortunate, you know, you create some of your serendipity there. And, you know, congrats on being a Truman Scholar. For those who don't know, I mean, that is a tremendous accomplishment, being a Truman Scholar. In fact, you and I had the opportunity tour the Truman Library together, I think when we were in Kansas City for ICMA, right. We had a nice walk out there. It was a great experience. But you find yourself to the Central Coast. Why the Central Coast?
You know, it's funny. In my world, Debbie and I, my wife's Debbie, kind of have a joke, BC, before children. Before children, and we have a great marriage and love her to death, great wife, great partner. And that's another thing. If you're a city executive, it's so important to have a strong partner that you can trust and bounce things off of. And I know, Ryder, you too enjoy a strong marriage and partner, which we're very fortunate guys. But so we used to take a trip for our birthday. We do birthday trips. And so in 2003, February, I've been reading a lot about this growing wine region, and Debbie and I both have a passion for wine, and this growing wine region of Paso Robles, and this is, you know, the next big thing. And I told her, I said, hey, let's go up there and see what's going on. And I remember driving past Santa Barbara, and you could hear the crickets. Like, where are we? And we went through the tunnel at Gaviota Pass, and I thought, oh man, it was like Christopher Columbus going off the edge of the earth, you know? I'm like, where is this? And so then we got to Paso Robles and had a lovely time enjoying wine and food. And, you know, here we thought the town was developed, and it was, no, it wasn't. It was still, we were kind of just country town. And we were driving, we had a red Toyota convertible, and we're driving down Vineyard Drive underneath oaks of vineyards around us. And we both said, man, we love this. And this is where we should raise our kids, out in the country, in small town. And so we just thought it was unreachable in, you know, getting a job here. There's only 7 cities in the county, and it's a very special place, San Luis Obispo County. We'll get to that later. But the couple months later, and this is another dating me. I know we're not old, Ryder, but we're seniors in this line of work. I hate to tell you. At least I still have brown hair. You do too. A couple months later, believe it or not, I attended the second new and future city manager session. I was as Glenn's assistant. CCMF. Yeah, CCMF. And this is really weird. So Glenn Southard was one of the, I wouldn't say he was a founder, But he was in the ground floor of the establishment of CCMF, and he was always a big supporter of it. And so he was the original facilitator for the new and future city manager workshop. And so he told me, hey, I need your help, but you're going to enroll in this too. It'll be good for you. So I say that because in 2003, then we'd just been here. In 2003, that spring, I went to the new and future city manager workshop in Pismo Beach, of all places. I mean, this is just serendipity at the Cliffs Resort, and met Wade McKinney. That's where I met Wade. And Wade was one of the facilitators as well. And Wade and I just hit it off. And so 3 months later, I'm at the MMASC conference. Isn't this something? Some things don't change. The power of networking and knowing people. And a recruiter, Bill Mathis, rest his soul, he's passed on, but came to me and said, I understand you liked the Central Coast. Atascadero has an assistant manager position, new position. You should apply for it. And that was 3 months after I'd been to Pismo, and about 5 months after Debbie and I said, man, what would it take to get here? And I interviewed and received the position. So that's what took us to the Central Coast. And we've never looked back. I did interview for a few jobs in Southern California, two actually. I received one and not the other. I was a runner up in Orange County in 2011. Not many people know that. And we just couldn't do it. We love it here.
Escape.
Yeah.
Well, I will just say, Nicole and I spend time up in the Central Coast. We have lots of clients in the Central Coast area. It is a tremendous part of California. And as you've observed, it's changed a lot and had a lot more people move there. And certainly, especially after the pandemic, a lot of people suddenly discovered it was a great place to be out of kind of big city areas. So it's a fascinating part of California, and really you're fortunate to live there with your family. So,
you know, I've learned a lot, you know, living in a isolated part of California. You really learn what communities do. You really learn to collaborate regionally. You really learn to care about people on a genuine basis, because our county only has 250,000 people in it. And with seven cities, it's really small, and we're isolated here. And just being in the country around agriculture and the beautiful outdoors, I think you learn to appreciate the hard workers and where food comes from, and just the beauty of Earth and God's creation, and being having some measure of more sustainability and concern. You know, all those things. It's really moving out of the big city here did really impact my worldview for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the environment around us on a daily basis will chip away at us one way or the other to an effect in a worldview. So speaking of which, Atascadero, so people know I'm on this quest to visit every city hall in California, and I'm up to like 210 at this point. There's 482 to get to, so I got a long ways to go. Atascadero has always been like the shocker of city halls that people expect, right? Because Atascadero is a nice middle-class town, Central Coast. It's right off the freeway, but you pull off and then you see this incredible city hall building.
I'm going to pull a picture.
Can you take a moment to just tell me about Atascadero, what you love about that town, and a little bit about its history too, because it is just a fascinating story about Atascadero and how it came to be.
Yeah, and I got to show, I mean, that's crazy. That's our city hall. I mean, and people would never notice it. It's a double rotunda building built in 1913. It started, the colony, and the building was completed in 1918. And, you know, Atascadero, this is actually very interesting. I think we're definitely being discovered, but you're right. We were a sleepy bedroom community to San Luis Obispo for many, many years. But the history of the town is tremendous, if I may just share a bit, and it'll explain why the building is what it is. So in 1913, we were founded by our town, E.G. Lewis. Now, E.G. Lewis was a Renaissance man, we'd say today. He was a developer. He was a printer. He was just a real sharp businessman. And so he had developed University City, Missouri, and that was home next to St. Louis. It was an upscale part of St. Louis, Missouri. And he was on the committee and helped host the World's Fair in 1904. And from that, gained some notoriety. At the time, somewhere in there as well, he had come to California and subdivided Rancho Palos Verdes, so the peninsula, believe it or not. And so he earned a lot of money there. He was also printing a magazine. It was like Women's Farm Journal, I think it was called. Millions of women subscribed to this about rural living, farming, cooking, and he was very successful. And so when he came up to the Central Coast, he was looking for a parcel or land to build his utopian community. He wanted to build the perfect model community in the nation. And had these just utopian ideas of big flowers and vegetables and massive estates and easy to get around, car friendly, and cars at the time, you know, were new. And so he fell in love with Rancho Atascadero, which was a huge, about 40 square miles, roughly. And that today that encompasses the city of Atascadero and parts of the Asunción and county land towards Santa Margarita. So just above San Luis Obispo. And he bought that. And he created the colony of Atascadero, and we were the first master plan community, believe it or not. So people think it's Irvine, but it's not. Irvine was the first one to do it successfully and actually build the plan. But we were every parcel, every road, every school, hospital was all filed with the county at the same time in 1913-14. And so based on that, he moved his whole printing operation out here. The first public building was the printery, and he printed Illustrator Review, which is a precursor to Life magazine. And he was publishing pictures from the World War. The World War, the first one, right? And the magazine just exploded. And so he printed that here. So he started subdividing this community, and he put advertising in his magazines to come to California, land of opportunity, land of milk and honey, all of those things. And people started coming from around the world. This place got notoriety. He actually started printing the Atascadero News and would have great news articles about what was going on in the world and everything else. He had 250,000 people subscribed to that in San Francisco and Los Angeles. And so people were very curious about Atascadero and started coming from around the world. And they'd buy their lot, they'd pick it out. You could buy your lot through the mail, and you'd come and live in a tent city while your house was being built, your colony home. And so it had this tremendous heritage. And so he, through printing, raised money, and he wanted to build a massive city hall, an Italian Renaissance Mediterranean building that really would show the seat of government, the seat of administration of the colony, that would set the vision for what would become. And that's why we have the city hall. It's tremendous. It's been many things. It's been a bank. It's been a school. The city ended up, the colony had challenges developing. It went bankrupt. E.G. Lewis was arrested for mail fraud by the Postal Service. I think today we look back on that and question whether that was a crime or not, what he was doing, selling lots and magazines. I think he may have gotten crossways with the U.S. government. Go figure. Happens. We were selling our fruits and vegetables dehydrated, the Caladero process, to soldiers in World War I to feed them. And so he was a man. Anyway, so that's how we started. And the community really started to build for us for 5 or 6 years. We built our high school, our hospital, all beautiful architecture. And then it kind of crashed and languished for years to San Luis Obispo and Paso Robles. But today we're on fire, and people are finding us and loving us.
Yeah, it is the city hall. You had an earthquake up there. City hall, actually, building that you're in now was damaged in that. You went through a long process too with FEMA, where you had to move out quickly, move into a former bowling alley, and then once it was all fixed up, you guys, I mean, they only were able to move back into that city hall, I feel like 7 or 8 years ago, is kind of my vague recollection.
Yeah, it was funny. I got here in 2004, which the earthquake was in December 2003. So our temporary city hall was in an old pizza parlor that had shuttered. And then from there, we upgraded to a bowling alley. And we renovated that to be a more, to what most people would say is a nice city hall, frankly.
Yeah.
It was very nice. We were there my whole tenure for 8 years. And then in 2013, as I left the Pismo Beach, the Grand City Hall was reopened. So I never got to work in it, and I always wanted to. So here I am in the coolest office. I have a great view over our town square and fountain, and we have statuary from the World's Fair as well. We actually have a Carrara marble sculpture in the center of our town square that was a gift of Italy to the United States. It cost $27,000 back then in 1904. So it's worth millions of dollars today.
So bottom line is, for all the local government nerds out there, when you were driving on the 101 and you see a Pescadero, you need to pull off and you just need to check out City Hall, because it is absolutely incredible. And this double rotund is amazing. The council chamber is off the charts, unexpected. For a humble little town like Atascadero, it's absolutely phenomenal. And it's a great little town. They have a lot of development going on. I mean, I don't want to sound like I'm your chamber of commerce, but it is.
You're doing great. Really, keep going.
It is great. And there is a bakery also in a very nice hotel that's just 100 yards walk from City Hall that has probably the best almond croissants I've ever had in California. So if you like almond croissants, there's another really good reason to pull off the freeway.
Thank you.
All right. Well, and I'm sure at this point, we've either convinced people to go to Atascadero or convinced them that we are just paid hacks for Atascadero. But that's okay. Atascadero is cool. Tell me about your – so we heard a lot about your kind of career evolution. You've been involved with association groups, the League of Cities. And tell me about your involvement with the League of Cities. Why should city managers kind of think about that regional work versus – and your involvement in that League of Cities, what that means from the city and management profession, how we collaborate with our elected officials, obviously, the people we work for, we meaning you, the city manager community works for.
Yeah, I think that, you know, stuff doesn't just happen by itself. And I talked about how this is a small community. And I think, as you know, city managers, and I'm biased, obviously, are really pivotal leaders in the state. You know, we advise the city councils, we lead the staff people, we motivate, encourage, and set direction for all the cities of California. And so we're in really unique positions to change and impact change and do good. And so I've naturally always been an involved person. You know, I joined service clubs, I joined things. And so I've always enjoyed serving and being a leader. And I think I got my first piece of that being an MMASC. I was on the regional board. I was chair of our North LA County region in 1999, 2000. And I was MMASC president in 2001, too, and loved that service. I loved the networking and connecting to people and hearing people out and just growing the organization and making it stronger and better. And that was my kind of first snippet. The MMASC president is on the executive committee of the city manager's department for California. I don't know if people may make that connection. And so I went to an executive committee meeting, and here were all these legend city managers talking about heavy issues of redevelopment and finance and community development and things that were really important back then. And I was just fascinated by the discussions and the quality of people. And I thought, man, I want to be part of that. I want to contribute to that. And so League of Cities, I got involved more because, again, I had two great mentors, right? So Wade McKinney and Glenn Souther were both on the CCMF board, and both were presidents of CCMF. And so having worked for them, they really practiced what they preached. They believed in moving on the next generation and advancing it. And so they, back then, assistant managers didn't get to be involved. Assistant managers didn't go to city manager department meetings or ICMA conferences for that matter. But I was very grateful. I think I was like one of the only assistant city managers at conferences. They let me come. And so I'd get to see this stuff and have exposure to Chris McKenzie and things the league was doing and some of these discussions. And so I still say the league is supposed to be Cal Cities, but, you know, old habits, right? And so that's how I started getting involved and just being around. And I think I never really thought I'd be in leadership in Cal Cities. I wasn't sure how that worked. But then after, remember the Bell crisis and Rizzo and that whole thing? And our profession just had a, it was almost like an end of innocence or an awakening. It was kind of our generational moment, right? And we needed to respond quickly to that, to share with people what city managers really were and how important we were to a community and really the integrity all the rest of us had and how we manage our communities. And so I got really involved in that. With you. That's what I think when we started working together to tell the story of city managers. And from that, I started getting aware of more people and meeting more people, et cetera. So based on that, when I became city manager of Pismo Beach, I thought, okay, it's time to step up. And so I actually said I'd run for one of the at-large positions, one of the officers, and received a call from someone that said, no, you should run for vice president of the department. You are a great voice. You're younger. You're fresh. I have fresh ideas. And so I said, I don't know, you know, and I was really encouraged to do it. And so I put my name in and that was great. That was in 2000, I want to say like 15, I think, 14, 15, put my name in and worked through the chairs. And so when I was president of the department, my goal was really to inspire all my colleagues to be our best, to be good, strong managers and to take care of your families, take care of yourself, and most, you know, take care of your community. And just, I thought it was a great year. And then from that, as when you get involved, I really started seeing the bigger picture. It's interesting because most people are in Cal Cities for membership and Cal Cities for education and the conferences. And that's all really important. But what's really, really important is the collective voice of cities at the Capitol and the work we do to fight for local control and fight for our right to keep our communities safe and to develop our communities the way we best see fit. We know best how to develop all of our cities. One of the amazing things about California is that we're all different. We all have a great history, and we all have different things that make us click. And that's why I'm passionate about local government, and that we make the decisions best in our own council chambers. And so as I started seeing that, I realized that it was time for me to step up to the board of directors. And the board of directors, you know, it's the Cal Cities is a huge organization with all the policy committees and departments and divisions, and it's very difficult to navigate. I get that. But being the city manager on the board of directors, there's one city manager on the board of directors, and there's 56 directors, I believe, is a very humbling. It's a challenging role because you have to be the voice of the profession at times when elected officials are being elected officials and having policy debates and maybe missing one of the key issues of an item and how it'd be implemented and how it really work. And so I've enjoyed that and being a voice for the staff of Cal Cities and being an advisor to our amazing director, Carolyn Coleman. So I've really enjoyed it. That's kind of how I got involved in Cal Cities. And I love that work. At the same time, I'm passionate about the people in our profession. There's amazing men and women that call themselves city managers. And unfortunately, we don't take care of ourselves, many of us. We just pour it all out for our city. We pour it all out for our staff when we come home to our family. And there's not much left or we don't look out for our health. And that's why I love serving in the California City Management Foundation Board of Trustees. I am a trustee. I'm very fortunate and humbled to have been selected to do that. We take care of city managers. And if you aren't a member of CCMF and you're a city manager or assistant, you need to be, because this is the foundation that looks out for you. You know, ICMA is all about our profession and professional development and education and best practices, and it's very important. But CCMF is unique to California city managers and taking care of us and making sure the whole manager is being cared for. So anyway, that's kind of how I got involved in Cal Cities and CCMF and what I do.
I seem to recall that you were involved in a coastal cities coalition that got developed in the league. Is that, or Cal Cities, I should.
Oh yeah. You know, I've tried not to get into all the little nuances. Of
well, things. I know, but it is interesting because it was didn't exist 10 years ago, right?
No. So I helped start it. And when I was in Pismo Beach, it was clear that, look, back to all cities are unique, but coastal cities have some incredible challenges. Not just the nature of being on the coast and the coastal environment, but the California Coastal Commission is incredibly challenging. Yeah. And it's like this super planning commission over cities. And back to what I said, where cities should have self-governance and cities should be able to decide what's best for them, the Coastal Commission has a say. So even if you go through your planning commission, you go through your council, the Coastal Commission really tells you how your community will develop or not develop. And that is so challenging for coastal cities. And I thought we needed a better voice. We needed a better venue to come together and discuss these unique issues. And so, yes, I was involved in creating the Coastal Cities Group. It was there. It was dormant. It fell apart. And for a few years, it just sat dormant. And so getting it involved with Mayor Waggy, our mayor in Pismo Beach, and getting that reinvigorated, now it's a force. I mean, they actually are. The commissioners listen and participate in joint discussions. Other things, right, before I was on the board of directors, I had the privilege of serving on the strategic planning, developing the Cal City strategic plan. That was really a neat opportunity as well. I'm representing city managers on that. So that was where I got to start meeting other board members and league officers and realized that was something I wanted to do. I was also very involved in the prop. This is going back now. Remember Prop 22 and Prop 1A? Yeah. I was involved in those campaigns. I was providing state leadership to those too. So those are some of my first involvements in Cal Cities that kind of cut my teeth.
Yeah. Well, it's it provides a great venue in which for these common interest areas to kind of align and meet with one another and collaborate and, you know, take a message to Sacramento to try to fight for things. And sometimes successfully, sometimes we get punched in the face at the local government level and have to, you know, roll with it as best we can. Certainly we've seen a lot of incursion on land use issues into the local government space over the last few years. When you look across the landscape of California cities though, what are the kind of common challenges you're hearing from your role at a more statewide level with Cal Cities? Like, what are the things that you're chewing on as a local government leader and contemplating as you navigate California and then obviously help Atascadero navigate these issues?
That's a great question. You know, I think as diverse as our cities are, there are common issues that we must deal with. And I'm happy to share some of those. And it's interesting, Cal Cities works. I mean, as big an organization it is and as big and diverse as the board is, when we set our strategic goals, I think they really hit the bullseye. Cal Cities is focused on what our cities need. So what is that? You know, housing is real. The housing struggle is really real. And if you have young children in California or children at all, how do you have a place if you want your family to reside here and be prosperous and Ryder have the career that you and I have had? We own homes and how fortunate we are. That's a challenge where we house people. And if you don't have kids or your kids have a home, you know, where's your nurse and your teacher and your police officer going to live? And so as we grow as a state, that whole service profession, like where we live, we're a tourism community, but people who support tourism can't afford to live here. And so that is a big, big issue. So if you, there are many people who I have a house, it's not a problem. No, it is a problem because your service workers don't have a house and the people that support you and for your kids and for our state to continue to flourish. So housing is a really big issue. It is. People talk a lot about it because it is a big issue. I think that I won't get into why climate change is happening. That's a whole nother topic that's above my pay grade. And I think you and I share some views on that. But nonetheless, things are different. We have the storm surges are more and wildfires are more and the erratic rains and flooding we have. I don't know why, but they are. And so being prepared, I think cities are being more resilient for natural disasters and planning for those things and mitigating the impacts of a disaster before they happen, right? That's something good cities are talking about. We here in our beautiful city are very concerned about wildfire. It's been a while for us. And so we know that that's a very real threat. We're surrounded by forest. And that's something that we plan for. So that's a big issue, natural disaster response and making sure your community is resilient. I think in many of us who've been in California, native Californians and grew up, California in the 60s, 50s, 60s, 70s was utopia. And it was financially wealthy and it was investing in the most incredible water systems and the most incredible freeway systems that were the envy of the world and the most incredible infrastructure to match our natural beauty. And right around the late 70s, 80s, and we stopped, priorities changed, and we don't invest in our infrastructure. And so now all that's coming to roost. And so as we're trying to build more housing, we have antiquated roads, antiquated highways, antiquated water systems that let alone we have to keep up with the growth that are insufficient for what we have. And so I think that whole infrastructure thing, it sounds boring, but that's still a very big issue. I spend a lot of my day, we're building a new wastewater plant. My former city manager job, a recycled water facility to make sure we have enough water for drought and you know, improving our water systems and water quality, right? That's an issue. And then I think this whole response to, we've really had a, we don't focus on crime and law enforcement, in my opinion, anymore. You know, the state has made it very difficult and made many crimes permissible. And unfortunately, I'll say it, crime pays in the state in many ways. And so all of this stuff, the drug issues, the homeless issues, all these things lay to roost in cities. We have to deal with it with our police departments. And we're losing tools, frankly. And so that's why it's getting harder to recruit police officers. It's getting harder to, because it's harder to do their job. And so I'm a huge supporter of law enforcement. I always have been, but that's an issue for cities too. So I think those are some of the big things all of our cities are tackling. And that those are goals of the League of California Cities. Those very issues are things that we are standing behind. So I hope you support Cal Cities in our efforts.
Yeah. I share some your observations about kind of the slowdown in the 80s and 90s and sense about major infrastructure investments and progress. You know, one of my favorite questions when I'm talking with elected leaders and city managers, especially, you know, folks that have been around a couple decades, is to say, you know, what big problems have we solved in California in the last 20 years, right? And I don't say that to be, like, I'm not trying to be a jerk or trigger people. I'm just trying to like ask the question, like where are we gaining confidence in government to achieve certain things? Confidence at the statewide basis, I should say. I think there's lots of confidence, certainly more confidence in cities than statewide. But you know, what's the answer to that question? What have we achieved? What's like something we've accomplished in the last 20 years where we solved the problem? And, I thought about this a while. I have one. I would encourage my audience to come up with some lists if they want to remind me some others. And there may be some smaller things that certainly have come up and whatnot. But, you know, for me, the biggest one is air quality, right? And you were in Claremont, so you know this well. Like Claremont was in San Gabriel Valley. I went to Claremont McKenna, so I was actually in Claremont. I left Claremont before you got involved with the city there, but we were both in Claremont within a 10-year span. You used to not be able to see Mount Baldy behind Claremont on a typical day, right? Now you can pretty much see it every day. So the air quality is 1,000 times better. There's a lot of reasons around catalytic converters, miles per gallon, source pollution that's not mobile source pollution, but stationary source pollution that's been addressed. I'm sure, you know, gutting out the manufacturing industry from LA County also had a contributing factor for why air quality is better. So any number of factors, but fundamentally air quality is improved. That's great. Like that was a nice accomplishment. But I always challenge people to say, like, give me some other examples of things we've really helped accomplish from a policy basis and solve the problem that you can share. Something along the lines of the State Water Project or the Cal University system or things like that.
I think California as a state, and I'm a manager, so I'm not going to get political here, but I think values change, right? Focus changes. I think focus changed from having the best infrastructure, the best transportation systems, the best cities, physical environments, to a real focus on, like you said, environmental quality, environmental cleanliness, and social equity and social services. I think that's something the state, many look to our state as a hallmark for those things. But those are very different priorities. And I think that shift, and cities don't provide those services, right? Where counties do and other entities. And so that's made it more difficult for us. I think since the late 70s, that has been the focus, environmental services, social equity. Those are important things, no doubt about it.
Yep.
But very different. And now then these issues are laying to roost in California cities.
Yeah. It's actually kind of an interesting, I think about building out the infrastructure and the vision for cities and investing in infrastructure and building the foundational civilization elements that allow communities to succeed. And it actually caused me to reflect on the founding of Atascadero and the utopia vision, right, that they had for that. And obviously it went off the rails, like something broke, maybe perhaps due to factors beyond the control of the founding visionary, but it does take you back to that pioneering spirit that existed and trying to reflect back on that and how we apply that in our modern psyche for our approach to cities and trying to do amazing things with them. So,
you know, it's such a conundrum, right, of just resources and focus. I mean, I think it's wonderful that people in our state, I think we're a very welcoming state. I think people of all types and all backgrounds probably are safer and more welcome here than others, which is a great value. I think that people have a lot more opportunity here in some ways and less in others. And so it's just one of those things that is a challenge. But California is definitely unique. It's that when I meet managers from other states and around the country and we share ideas, I think there's kind of California and then some of the rest. You know, it's definitely a unique place to manage a city.
Yeah. All right. I want to start to wrap it up here because we're approaching our hour of conversation. But obviously, you tremendous background, great exposure to mentors. You've been, you know, created some of your own fortune and been fortunate as a result of just serendipity and luck. But what's your advice to someone starting out in their local government? You know, how do you advise them to pursue the city management profession and think about channeling their career towards that if that's their end goal?
Yeah, I would first say I think there's no more rewarding career. I love this job. I'm passionate about it. You know, getting to go to work every day, knowing that your time is enhancing the quality of life of others and the economic opportunity of others. And that I think there are many people that impact a community, but a city manager has so many levers that you pull. And I think you really can change the trajectory of a community. That's incredible. You know, managing and leading a staff of wonderful people and being a mentor and a coach to those people and helping them become the best version of themselves, incredible. Getting to work with talented elected officials, helping them achieve the dreams for their community that they had, amazing. And so there's just so many upsides. So what my advice is, this is a great profession. Do it, lean into it. Now, if you decide to lean into it, watch government in action. So, you know, watch meetings, start reading agendas, follow local issues in the newspaper, connect to a good city manager, connect to a good leader in a city, and intern, shadow them, watch them, take that first job. The job itself isn't so important as much as is the stature and reputation of the agency and the boss or the person you'll work with. Let them then guide you and mentor you and lift you up, and then start climbing the ladder. You know, cities, one of the things I try and encourage, and I know many of my wonderful colleagues are seeing it the same way. We used to be so parochial that if you didn't work for a city, we weren't going to hire you. And so again, that getting into a city is hard. Yeah. And some of us are still that way, but I think we're getting better at seeking new talent and seeking people who have transferable skills. So, but that would be some of my advice. Get in, dive in. It's great. The pay and benefits are great, but more important is the chance to make a difference. So just get in there and call your city manager and ask your city manager for lunch. We love to meet with people who are interested in our profession. That's the best way to start. Call your city manager. Take them to lunch.
Yeah. Well, I'll just harken back to how you managed to find your first management analyst job in Claremont. I mean, you mailed every city in LA. I'm sure that hasn't happened by anybody in the last 15 years. Maybe they sent a mass email, but that doesn't quite have the same effect. And I find that very amazing, right?
Art Gallucci sent me back the nicest letter. You know, he just retired from Cerritos, but I remember he wrote me such a nice letter. And Leroy, of course, wrote me a letter because I'd worked for him and there wasn't a full-time job opening. 98 was kind of a hard time, but yeah.
That's amazing. Well, Jim, thank you. Thank you for the time today. That's today's report. Thank you, Jim, for joining us. From the whole Public CEO team, myself, Ryder Todd Smith, thank you for your time.
We hope you learned something new and inspiring that will help you in your public service. Remember, Public CEO has a daily newsletter that is free to those who sign up at publicceo.com. If you have feedback, questions, or guest suggestions for Public CEO Report, please email editor@publicceo.com.